Love Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the LA Steel Show. I'm Lila.
And Will. And blistering hot here tonight in Northwest Connecticut.
It's 68 to 70 degrees out there now.
Are you serious, Lila?
Yeah, I am.
Lila, it's 80 degrees in the house here.
No.
All right? We haven't got the air on yet, okay?
It's not bad at all, folks.
It's pretty hot up here, so don't listen to Lila. She can live in 100-degree weather and not bother. Me, 80 is my limit.
What isn't even that now?
It's about that now and here, Lila. No?
No.
I don't care. I'm hot.
Leo can't take any kind of heat. But
anyway. I can't take any kind of hot weather. Hate hot weather, folks. That's what I hate.
I can't imagine what you'd do if you lived in Louisiana.
I would die. I would commit suicide. That's what I would do. Because either the heat would kill me or I would have to kill myself.
Those poor people, it's very, very hot, and they have the stress of having that oil spill.
There's an article I was going to bring up about it raining oil down in Louisiana.
Oh, I just hope that's not really happening. Because all of the fumes and the chemicals in that oil would be so toxic.
It is.
Poor folks.
It is.
Terrible.
It is happening, and I'm going to get to go to it in a minute. But if Lila will read one of these wonderful articles that we have
tonight. Something on cell towers.
Let me get to my thing here.
From the KansasCity.com.
Yep.
California school launches cell tower study. 5 years ago, Sprint erected an 80-foot cell tower in the middle of California's Vista Del Monte Elementary School. At the time, Sprint studied the tower's structural safety and an initial power reading, but since then, teachers and students have become increasingly concerned about the tower's electromagnetic effect on health. The Vista Del Monte tower is 20 feet. Is 20 feet from the classroom building. And next to the playground and lunch tables. Teachers, 20 feet from the classroom building, that's really close. And next to the playground and lunch tables,
it's right
on top of them. The teachers and staff at the school in the Victoria Park neighborhood have expressed concerns about the number of cancer cases that have appeared at the school since the tower was installed. Janet Ecker, a retired Vista Del Monte teacher, used to work in one of the classrooms closest to the tower. She has recorded 9 current and former staff members who have been diagnosed with cancer. Ecker has been diagnosed with thyroid cancer and has spoken to the Board of Education about this matter in the past. The school district receives about $1,500 a month to house the Sprint cell tower, and also uses it for district communication and internet equipment. Considering the budget crunch that many school districts face each year, that kind of steady income is a big incentive to have a tower. Still, school officials are listening to the concerns of staff and students. This week, school officials will launch a $15,000 independent review to study the electromagnetic waves coming from the cell tower, particularly looking for any irregular electric waves or dirty power. You can bet that many school districts nationwide will be eager to hear the results. Yeah, boy, that's a lot to be concerned about.
I think what bothered me most about that is that, that school was so stupid, so damn stupid, all right, that not only did they not even consider the health effects, obviously, but they only charge $1,500 a month to install this huge, cell tower in their school. I mean, that thing should be worth $150,000 a month to these bastards. You know what I mean? Minimum, all right? But yet, this Kansas City should be blown off the face of the earth to be that stupid. I'm sorry. You see this stuff, you know this stuff, and yet they don't the stupidity of people, it's just beyond me, Lila. It's just constantly beyond me. And the educational system in this country, I mean, you got some serious boneheads working there. All right, let's see. I'm trying to find this article.
It's not the teachers. It's the Board of Education.
Board of Education, but you got superintendents and everybody else. People don't. I mean, the teachers could say, "Hey, we don't want this thing. Let's stop. We're not going to work here if this is going to be it." You know, you go on strike or something. I mean, it affects the health and well-being.
You're not allowed to strike, probably, in that state.
You know what? Who the hell cares? Who in the hell cares? You know, it's either that or your life. And obviously, you know, I think I'd prefer to strike than die.
9 cases of cancer. That's pretty high. Yeah, I wonder how many kids are in this school. How many childhood cancers?
How many childhood cancers? Yeah. Oh, sure. I'm sure there's a lot of them. Probably got leukemia and everything else in there.
Let's go to that site we like.
Yeah, I was just trying to find this thing because I saw it. I had it the other day, and I just saw it. It was raining oil in Louisiana.
Mm.
And I'm just trying to see if could you just read another one quick, and then I'm going to I'll go to that.
From Blackwater?
Blackwater one is interesting. Crony capitalism is interesting.
I know, I've read these.
There's a bunch of them. They're really interesting. So, let's see here.
On Friday, the U.S. State Department awarded Blackwater another diplomatic security contract to protect U.S. officials in Afghanistan. CBS News reported that the $120 million deal is for the protective services at the U.S. consulate in Herat and Mazar-i-Sharif. Blackwater has another security contract in Afghanistan worth $200 million. Can you move the light up a little closer?
Because
you keep moving the hand. Oh, better. And the company also works for the CIA and the U.S. military and provides bodyguards for U.S. Ambassador Carl Aikenberry, as well as U.S. lawmakers and other officials who visit the country. The company has 4 forward operating bases in Afghanistan, and Prince has boasted that Blackwater's counter-narcotics forces have called in NATO airstrikes. The new security contract was awarded to one of Blackwater's alter egos, the United States Training Center, despite the indictment of 5 senior company officials on bribery, weapons, and conspiracy charges. Its operatives in both Afghanistan and Iraq have been indicted for killing innocent civilians. The Senate Armed Services Committee has called on the Justice Department to investigate Blackwater's use of a shell company, Paravent, to win training contracts in Afghanistan. Despite these and numerous other scandals, the State Department once again awarded the company a lucrative contract. Under federal acquisition regulations, the prosecution of the specific Blackwater individuals does not preclude the company or its successive companies and subsidiaries from bidding on contracts. A State Department spokesperson told CBS, on the basis of full and open competition, the department performed a full technical evaluation of all proposals and determined that the U.S. Training Center has the best ability and qualifications to meet the contract requirements. Representative Jan Shankowitzki, who chairs the Intelligence Subcommittee on Oversight and Investigations, immediately blasted the State Department's awarding of the contract to Blackwater. This is a company whose cowboy-like behavior has not only resulted in civilian deaths, it also jeopardized our mission and safety of U.S. troops and diplomatic personnel worldwide. Instead of punishing Blackwater for its extensive history of serious abuses, the State Department is rewarding a company with up to $120 million in taxpayer funds. I strongly believe, and this is Shakowitzki saying this, I strongly believe that the former Blackwater should not be receiving U.S. contracts. I have repeatedly urged the U.S. government to no longer do business with this company. Though the name Blackwater has become synonymous with the worst of contract abuses, the bigger problem is our dangerous reliance on such companies for the business of waging war. early this year, Shankowski and Senator Bernie Sanders reintroduced the Stop Outsourcing Security Act, which would phase out the use of private security contractors by the government. Ironically, Hillary Clinton was a co-sponsor of the legislation when she was a senator and running for president. Now as Secretary of State, she is a U.S. official in charge of most Blackwater contracts. Blackwater is also bidding on a contract potentially worth up to $1 billion to train the Afghan National Police.
Well, all right. I can't find that article. Yes, dear.
We're wasting time here.
Okay, dear. Oh, let's see. I'm going to go. You got 40 articles there that you could read right now.
Well, I'm waiting for you.
You could read something.
But
I'm going to go to the site so we can get the stuff. And then, not a second.
This is from Press TV. Crony capitalism reigns U.S. economy. A prominent U.S. economic and banking expert has portrayed a grim outlook for the world's most powerful economy, saying the crony capitalism runs rampant in the U.S. Writing in the Wall Street Journal, Gerald O'Driscoll, the former director of the Center for International Trade and Economics at the Heritage Foundation, believes that a growing tide of fraud and corruption has surged in the current U.S. financial system that is on the verge of becoming an economy of liars run by crony capitalism. In the wake of a bruising financial turmoil in the U.S., including a subprime mortgage crisis in 2009, many experts have persistently called for a root and branch financial reforms in the U.S. Congress. These days, people might think the U.S. is reeling from financial straits and that the worst is behind them, but pundits predict the next mortgage crisis is on the horizon. According to O'Driscoll, who has been a vice president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas, free markets depend on truth-telling, but in the U.S. today, we are moving away from the reliance on honest pricing. The federal bond government controls 90% of house finance. Policies to encourage home ownership remain on the books. So what do you have there, Leo? Do you have a video?
Not yet. I'm working on it.
Or read something?
Not yet. Hang on.
I'll find something. Read that one right there.
Louisiana police pullover activist at behest of BP. Last week, Drew Willen, conservation coordinator for the American Birding Association, was filming himself across the street from BP building, Deepwater Horizon Response Command in Houma, Louisiana. As he explained to me, he was standing in a field that did not belong to the oil company when a police officer approached him and asked him for ID and strongly suggested that he get lost, since BP doesn't want people filming. Okay. Everyone knows that now that BP is still blocking press access to oil spill sites, even though they're not supposed to do that anymore. I've been blathering about it for weeks. It's been all of 3 days since four contractors would let me through the Point Oceans. I don't think I want to read this because it's just kind of, you know, it's a lot of bullshit. Mother Jones, just bullshit. Let's see. Maybe it's kind of dry today. Let's see.
There's a YouTube thing. Why don't you put that on?
Well, Palestinian on the map.
Palestine on the map. Just see what it says.
Yeah, but I don't want to have to play this if it, you know. Here we go. Over 2,000 oil skimmers available in U.S. that Obama refuses to use. If I got a little video here too. It was one, if one was a cynic, then you would believe that the complete inaction on the part of the administration was purposeful and used in an effort to perhaps ram through their agenda. A crisis was created. It almost as if it is deliberately not being fixed. Clear options on the table are not being used, and one can only wonder why. I've been wondering that question for a long time. There's a video.
Any new developments in the cleanup effort?
Well, I think the thing that's outrageous is that we only have 20 skimmers off the coast of Florida. There are 2,000 skimmers in the United States. We haven't even asked as a federal government for those skimmers to come to the Gulf. There's huge swaths of oil right off our beaches that could really ruin our way of life in North Florida. And the federal government, who wants to take over every other aspect of our life, can't get this one thing right that they should be doing right. So I've talked to the president about it. He doesn't seem to know the situation about foreign skimmers, domestic skimmers. They said to me, look, you know, some of these skimmers we can't take from other places in the country because they may need them for an oil spill. That's like, you know, me saying, well, I can't send a fire truck to your house that's burning down because another house may burn down. It just doesn't make any sense. So
you're saying we have the capability of cleaning up this mess right now. Obama's just dropping the ball.
He is. We have 2,000 skimmers in this country, plus the foreign countries. The Dutch came into my office yesterday and said, we have these super skimmers. We've been offering them. And the U.S. government is saying no. There was a report out from Associated Press this week that 21 offers of assistance from 17 countries have been denied. It's just beyond comprehension that we wouldn't use all the resources we can to clean up this oil. So I'm going to keep banging on.
This is really frightening. It is absolutely frightening. Let's continue this. This spill is deliberate, and it is, you know, this is unbelievable. Senator Limu says, I think it's outrageous that we only have 20 skimmers off the coast. Well, he just said that, but in his article. So that's all there is to that. But we have 2,000 oil skimmers, and we're using 20 of them.
Hmm.
And that's a sick.
And his answer for not moving them is that there may be an oil spill. Well, we have when you...
But it makes no sense. And it's $20 billion that all of a sudden BP suddenly agreed to come up with overnight. You know, there's something really smelly here.
You wonder what those people signed off.
There's something wrong here. There's definitely something wrong here. And hopefully eventually we'll get to the bottom of it, but, you know, before it's too late. But I don't know. It's just unbelievable what's going on, folks. Internal Revenue Service may tax Gulf Coast damage claims following deepwater oil spill. Imagine that. President Barack Obama created a $20 billion disaster fund last week to compensate victims who have lost their livelihood after placing a six-month ban on deepwater drilling in the region. The April 20 oil rig explosion of Deepwater Horizon killed 11 workers and resulted in the worst oil spill in history. The IRS could not comment on whether an exception would be made. And Kenneth Feinberg, who was overseeing the handout, said he hasn't determined if the funds would be taxed. But tax experts said all income can be taxed under federal law unless specific exemptions are made by the Treasury Department or Congress. I mean, these bastards could actually tax these poor people.
Yeah.
Imagine that, for the benefits they're getting. Just unbelievable bastards. The Internal Revenue Service may take a bite out of the $20 million. Locals are fuming.
Yeah, sure, Federal Reserve.
Many residents were already surprised that BP took so long to dish out the payments. So when they got their compensation, a few thousand dollars each, they spent it quickly. If they're going to pay you a lump sum, like for a year, then bam, take the taxes out of the check, said Todd Pengel, an unemployed Gulf Coast shrimper from Boothville. But a little bit at a time, they shouldn't. Pellegrill said he immediately spent his $2,500 check buying groceries for his family and paying off bills. President Obama created a $20 billion disaster relief fund last week to compensate victims who have lost their livelihood after placing a six-month ban on deepwater drilling in the region. The April 20 oil rig explosion of Deepwater Horizon killed 11 workers. Okay, we know that. But the IRS would not comment on whether the exemption would be made. And Kenneth Feinberg, who was overseeing the handouts, said he didn't know. The IRS would not comment on whether the exception would be made, but tax experts said all income can be taxed with the experience we've had with tornadoes and hurricanes, they know they need to address this, said John Ames. But Sherry Edwards, who books charter rushes, is not thrilled that she may have to pay additional taxes. She's already losing $270 a week. I haven't even thought about taxes, she said. Blah, blah, blah.
Poor people.
Yeah, I mean, they're just going to loot them. And God, there's a revolt. We got to have a revolution, folks. We just got to have one. Talk about a revolution.
Let's put that on.
Right, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I had a little song from Tracy Chapman that says, Talking About a Revolution. It's a good song, I believe, if you've ever heard it. Play it. Antivirus and firewall software on their computers before being allowed to connect to the internet under a new plan to fight cybercrime. And if their computer did get infected, internet services provider like Telstra and Optus could cut off their connection until the problem was solved. A 260-page report released by the House of Representatives Standing Committee on Communications outlined a plan to mandate internet users to install government-approved software before their internet connection can be activated.
Oh.
Yeah, of course, the vast majority of internet users already use antivirus software, but by creating the precedent of having to conform to government mandates simply to get online, this opens the door to later requiring government permission to use the Internet at all, as well as a Chinese-style ID verification system, which will prevent undesirables from using the web. It also makes it easier for the government to use the law to subsequently demand that a mandatory Internet filter also be installed as part of the software package that blocks websites deemed offensive to the authorities. Efforts to place restrictions on the Internet are unfolding apace in Australia, where the government is implementing a mandatory and wide-ranging Internet filter modeled on that of the communist Chinese government.
Georgia.
Yeah. Australian Communication Minister Stephen Conroy said the government would be the final arbiter of what sites would be blacklisted under refused classification. Jesus. And the official justification for the filter is to block child pornography. However,
right,
as the watchdog group Electronic Frontiers Australia has pointed out, the law will also allow the government to block any website it desires, while the pornographers can relatively easily skirt around the filters. Earlier this year, the WikiLeaks, a website, published a leaked secret list of sites slated to be blocked by Australia's state-sponsored parental filter. The list revealed the blacklisted sites such as online poker sites, YouTube links, regular gay and straight porn sites, Wikipedia entries, euthanasia sites, websites of fringe religions such as satanic sites, fetish sites, Christian sites, the website of a tour operator, and even a Queensland dentist. All right. The filter will even block web-based games deemed unsuitable for anyone over the age of 15, according to the Australian government. Senator Joe Lieberman on Sunday called
deemed
for the
unsuitable for anyone over the age of 15?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Deemed unsuitable for anyone over the age of 15. No, it doesn't.
I see. The game, like Xbox for kids. See, what happens is that adults are hooking up with kids on those sites.
The
people are too old.
Would even block web-based games deemed unsuitable anyone over the age of 15. Okay. Joe Lieberman on Sunday called for the United States to move towards a Chinese-style system of Internet control. Isn't that freaking Joe Lieberman? Lieberworm. And under Lieberman's 197-page Protecting Cyberspace the National Asset Act PDF, President Obama would be given a kill switch to shut down parts of the Internet. Constant fear-mongering about cyber attacks is the cover for a global assault on Internet freedom by authorities. The web is being overtaken by independent media outlets, which are now beginning to eclipse established news organs. That's what's happening. This has enabled activists and the politically oppressed to expose government atrocities and cover up at lightning pace,
cover up at lightning pace.
Right, something the system is keen to curtail.
Mm.
So we're looking at some serious stuff here, guys. Serious stuff. Leaked documents show Palestinian Authority undermined Turkey's push for UN flotilla probe. Palestinian Authority attempted to neutralize the United Nations Human Rights Council resolution condemning Israel's deadly attack on the Gaza flotilla. Leaked UN and Palestinian Authority documents obtained by the Electronic Intifada show Israel's May 31st attack killed 9 Turkish citizens, including a dual U.S.-Turkish citizen, and injured dozens of others aboard the
Mava Marmara international waters. The Electronic Intifada, today publishes one of the documents it's obtained containing proposed amendments to a draft Human Rights Council resolution. Annotations to the resolution indicates the Palestinian Authority stood with European Union countries against Turkey's call for robust action to hold Israel accountable. the PA's apparent collusion to shield Israel, will recall for many its efforts to undermine UN action on the Goldstone report last October. The Palestinian Authority. It's just a
It's a tool of the Israelis, and yeah, it's a.
That's just more of the same, Leo.
Yeah. That was one of the resolution co-sponsors. Yeah, so
was the major part of that.
Yeah. So, what is the meaning of IMF economic austerity?
Oh, that should be interesting.
Now, this is a little YouTube video that we'll play. And,
well, we'll see what the IMF economic austerity measures really mean.
Okay. There we go.
It's an old trick to couch a painful reality inside of a flowery platitude. We hear it all the time in our daily lives, and for the most part, we know how to read between the lines when someone tries to do it to us. When your doctor tells you that this will only hurt a bit, you know enough to brace yourself for a painful procedure. When your boss tells you that he has an exciting new project for you to work on, you know you're about to get saddled with a job that no one else wants to do. When a salesman tells you that a used car is a fixer-upper, you know that you're looking at a lemon. Similarly, when the IMF tells a nation that they need to implement austerity in order to get themselves out of a financial crisis, here too lies a gaping chasm between the language and the reality. Austerity is one of those Orwellian terms that has been injected into our political discourse precisely because it is a nice-sounding word for a very painful reality. Austerity implies discipline, self-restraint, even nobility. Austerity is prudent. Austerity is modest. Austerity is a virtue. It is an end in itself. If the IMF or the European Central Bank come to the people of the collapsing European nation and tell them to sacrifice their pensions and their savings and their very standard of living, all for a debt that their government has fraudulently racked up in their name, no one would go for it, and rightly so. But tell those same people that they need to implement austerity measures in order to get back on their feet economically, and many will be willing to live in the harshest of conditions, content to put up with the dismantling of their nation itself, in the vain hope that by giving more power to the international financial institutions, they can somehow avoid economic collapse. The trick, of course, is that reality is completely the opposite. Like the doctor giving you false assurances that this will only hurt a bit, the economic amputation that the bankers have in store for the once proud nations of the industrialized world will be excruciating. Just ask anyone in the third world. They should know. They've been going through these austerity plans for decades. Ask the people of Ethiopia if the IMF World Bank economic therapy of the 1990s worked in their nation's favor. Ask them about the fire sale of state assets, public utilities, farms, and factories for pennies on the dollar to multinational corporations. Ask them how U.S. aid helped to dump surplus genetically engineered crops that couldn't be sold in Europe on poor African nations as charitable food aid. The extent of the horrors inflicted on Ethiopia by the international financiers almost beggars description. The banksters weren't content to carve the country into pieces and sell the scraps to their big business cronies. They then had the audacity to steal the very food off the poor farmers' tables and replace it with GM Frankenfoods that the rest of the world wouldn't even touch. This is the real face of austerity. It is nothing less than economic slavery to an elite group of banksters who have created their own fiat wealth out of thin air. Nor is Ethiopia the only example of this procedure. Quite the contrary. A similar process has played itself out in almost every country that the international finance oligarchs have tried to set straight with their procedures that will only hurt a little. In Brazil, IMF reforms actually altered the nature of the Brazilian constitution, halting transfers of federal funds to state governments so that those funds could be used to pay the bankers their pound of flesh. The IMF structural adjustment program in Peru devastated the local agricultural economy and made illegal coca production the only viable way for many farmers to make a living. From the first IMF-sponsored economic reform package in Peru in 1978 to the second round of IMF reforms in the early 90s, coca production increased over 400%. A $4.8 billion IMF loan to Russia in the late 90s never even made it into Russian coffers, with billions being deposited deposited directly into offshore bank accounts connected to mobsters, politicians, and banksters. Despite the fact that the Russian people did not see a single ruble of the siphoned money, they were still responsible for paying it back to the international bankers who were kind enough to lend it to them at interest. Time and time again, in country after country, in every corner of the globe, IMF loans spell disaster for the people who are left holding the bag. The crux of the entire issue is that none of this is unexpected. In fact, it is part of the design of the IMF austerity programs themselves. As revealed by Joseph Stiglitz, the former chief economist of the World Bank, the IMF's modus operandi is to conduct economic raids of debtor nations, dismantling and selling off infrastructure for the benefit of foreign corporations, and making sure that all public money is used to pay off the bankers. He even has a name for what happens after the austerity plan inevitably results in the dissolution of a society, the IMF riot. Bolivians rioted over water prices, Indonesians rioted over food and fuel subsidies, Ecuadorians rioted over cooking gas prices, Argentinians rioted over the complete collapse of their once rich nation. The common denominator in all of these cases were austerity measures and the IMF. Now, the beginnings of IMF riots are shaping up in Europe. People are taking to the streets to protest the measures that are about to be taken in the name of paying back to the banksters what corrupt governments stole from the people. On the other side stand the police, increasingly militarized and deployed in the service of the banksters and the politicians. The battle lines are forming. But is there another way out? Can the people of Europe learn from the examples of Iceland? That tiny North Atlantic island nation, too, found itself facing complete bankruptcy as the derivatives-fueled bubble of the Icelandic financial sector burst in the wake of Lehman Brothers. The people were once again left holding the bag for billions of dollars in debts owed to foreign banks, and the quiet streets of sleepy Reykjavik were erupting in violence. But in Iceland, the people did not fight the government. They became the government. A populist people movement forced the early collapse of Iceland's government, and non-politicians were swept into power. They held a referendum in which the people overwhelmingly rejected the idea that they were going to pay billions of dollars to foreign bankers for a debt that was not theirs. It was fraudulent, and they will not pay it. It remains to be seen whether the G20 nations will be able to follow the Icelandic example as the rot begins to eat away at the economies of the rich, industrialized nations. The first test of this may happen as early as this week at the G20 in Toronto, where the political puppets of the Canadian government have indebted the Canadian people by a staggering $1 billion to pay for a totalitarian police state operation that will inevitably provoke such mindless, violent reactions. We stand at a crossroads where the people can rise up in mass against the financial oligarchs who are puppeteering this downfall and get rid of the political puppets of both the left and the right who fall into lockstep with the vultures of Wall Street, no matter who sits in the White House. Or, not understanding what is happening or who is really behind it, the people can be led into senseless acts of violence against black-suited policemen in battles that will not address the root of the problem, but will lead to pain and suffering. The first step is to nurture the understanding that the austerity offered by the bankers is not the solution to our problems, but the beginning of them. Then we will know what it means when the IMF tells us this will only hurt a bit. For the Corbett Report in Western Japan, I am James Corbett.
That was kind of frightening, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very frightening.
So, I got one more.
So I wonder what's going to happen to Spain.
They're going bankrupt. Greece is going bankrupt. But it's going to be held before the end of this year.
So everyone is going to be, or any country that goes bankrupt,
the IMF
will step in and they're screwed.
Well, what they have to do is exactly what Iceland did and refuse to pay.
Mm-hmm. And don't
pay.
To
say, up your ass, I'm not paying. You know, and
well, they're not part of the European Common Market, you see. They have their own currency.
I know, but they can still say, I'm not paying.
Spain doesn't have their own currency.
Well, Spain has to start their own currency.
Yeah, that's about the only
thing
that's
all they
can
do, you know, and
Greece get out of the common
start,
market.
And all these people have to. The U.S. military has been giving tens of millions of American taxpayer dollars to warlords in Afghanistan.
Oh, that's nice.
Through logistic firms in the war-torn country. Investigators say as much as $4 million per week end up in the hands of the Taliban via local security companies in return for not attacking convoys carrying supplies to American troops based across Afghanistan. This is incredibly insane.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, just the insanity. No wonder McChrystal wanted the hell out of there. He refused to apologize and said, up yours, I'm not taking this anymore. You guys don't know how to run a war. You just want to keep this war going.
Uh-huh.
The U.S. military has been given tens of millions of dollars. I just read that. But the money allegedly ensures a safe passage for the Pentagon's transports. In the mafia-style protection payments are not made. The trucks responsible for transporting food, water, fuel, and ammunition will allegedly come under attack. Well, what do we have troops there for?
Yeah, what's the point?
You know, what the hell do we have planes and troops and billions of dollars there, you know, to fight these things? The report carried out by the subcommittee, National Security, further adds, Dick Lieberman?
Yeah.
The report carried out by the House Subcommittee for National Security, Homeland Security, something is his thing. Further adds that the armed groups are not the only beneficiaries of the hefty sum. Bribes and kickbacks are reportedly paid to nearly every Afghan governor, police chief, and local military commander until those territories, unit whose territory the convoy passed through. These agreements, made by security companies hired under the Host Nation Trucking Contract, violate laws on the use of private contractors as well as U.S. Department of Defense regulations, the document said. One of these security companies in question is allegedly owned by relatives of the Afghan president, Hamid Karzai.
Hmm.
The host nation trafficking trucking contract is an essential part of U.S. efforts to sustain more than 200 military combat outposts throughout Afghanistan. Pentagon Army Criminal Investigation Command was confirmed the 6-month-long inquiry and to report its own findings on the issue to the Congressional Committee later on Tuesday. That's today. That was yesterday. Yes. And the latest report comes amid a deteriorating security situation in Afghanistan. The 2001 U.S.-led invasion has launched with the objective of bringing peace and stability to Afghanistan. 9 years on, however, Taliban militancy has reached new heights and civilians continue to pay the price.
Huh.
So much for that. You know, and I'm telling you, you heard Obama give a big, muscle-bulging speech. But listen.
Oh.
I'm okay, former UN Prime Minister Tony Blair is urging charities to stop launching aid flotillas to blockaded Gaza Strip and use Israeli-run crossing instead. Use the Israeli-run crossings instead.
Oh, yeah, so they can turn you back.
Yeah, if we implement this policy so that things that people are trying to bring in by flotilla, you can bring in through the legitimate existing crossings. Do it that way, Blair told the Jerusalem Post. This is more sensible than to do that, a more sensible way to do that, he added. But remarks come in reports of more ships seeking to sail from Lebanon to break Israel's naval blockade in the next few days, despite Tel Aviv's Sunday announcement that it is easing the land blockade on the Gaza Strip and that it would allow all goods except for arms and weapons-related material into the territory. The move seemed to be aimed at evading mounting international pressure triggered by Israel's deadly attack on the flotilla.
Mm-hmm.
Blair said he had been discussing the easing of restrictions with Prime Minister Netanyahu long before the fatal onslaught. The envoy of the Quartet for Middle East Peace, however, sympathized with Israel over its alleged security concerns, which keep the blockade in place. Oh, yeah. And where I divide from some others in the international community is that I think that Israel has got a genuine security concern that it is entitled to meet. And for me, the fact that Israel says, look, we're not going to allow things into Gaza seaport, but you can bring them to Ashdod, and we can check them, and then they can come into Gaza. I think that's a reasonable position, don't you? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oy vey. What's the... there was one more. There was an article we had about Netanyahu refusing, now wanting to tighten up. So all this crap that Tony Blair is pontificating about and vomiting all over the world.
It isn't true.
And now Netanyahu vows to tighten Gaza blockade. All right. And hours after Israel government announced that it was intending to issue a new banned goods list to the Gaza Strip, focused on placating international demands to allow more food and humanitarian goods into the tiny enclave, Prime Minister Netanyahu delivered a pledge that the move would actually tighten the blockade. Our friends around the world are getting behind our decision and giving international legitimacy to the security blockade on Hamas, Netanyahu insisted, adding, again, the dual-use goods would continue to be barred from Gaza. And Israel military has claimed broad swaths of goods to be dual-use in the past, including a three-year ban on shoes, imposing a three-year ban on shoes under the claim that shoes could theoretically be made the part of a military uniform.
Just a minute. U.S. Coast Guard says two people related to the spill response have died.
What are you talking about?
Came across press TV.
Really?
U.S. Coast Guard said two people who have responded to the spill have died.
From whatever.
It must be the fumes, that toxic mix of chemicals.
Yeah. Huh. Well,
sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, okay. I'm glad you mentioned that, though. That's interesting. Officials say they're banning shoes because it could be made for a military uniform.
Yeah, right.
I mean, these assholes. And officials say that the banned luxury goods like pasta and coriander will be allowed into the Gaza Strip under the new list. But so far, the government has been mum on the most needed items, cement. Israel has barred all cement from the Strip as a dual-use good, as well as leaving the homes in the region in ruins since January 2009 invasion. Despite massive pledges of foreign aid, it seems the changes in the blockade may end up being superficial and none purely for the score to score points internationally. What?
BP experts believe BP's oil spill can hurt the health of cleanup crew.
Oh, absolutely. We know
but then we're gonna. It comes for a little while.
Wait
a minute.
Wait. Let's check. I think we can go. We can hit those. Wait for the next one.
Okay.
That's
the one related to the spill response of dye.
Yeah. Let's see what that's about. Two BP spill response personnel were killed.
More than 2 months after BP's massive oil leak in the Gulf of Mexico, the U.S. Coast Guard says two people related to the spill response have been killed. Admiral Thad Allen, the Federal Spill Response Commander, said on Wednesday that one person died in a swimming pool accident, and another on a vessel conducting oil skimming. Admiral Allen did not further elaborate on the two deaths. The commander further said that an incident prompted BP engineers to remove the containment cap on the oil geyser. He said the accident happened after an underwater robot had bumped into the venting system. We had an incident earlier today. They noticed that there was some kind of gas rising. Allen was quoted by AFP as saying, They indicated the problem was a remotely operated vehicle had bumped into one of the vents. Allen said, adding that the top hat container was being checked and could be reinstalled later Wednesday. An array of tactics employed by the London-based energy giant has been so far failed to completely contain the oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico.
Right.
The U.S. is already faced with a disaster in the southern coast, in which has been described as the country's worst environmental catastrophe. A new BP estimate puts the amount of crude gushing into the well at 10,000 barrels a day. 11 workers were killed in the April 20th explosion of Deepwater Horizon oil ring operated by BP.
All right. Got another one here I wanted to read. This is from telegraph.uk. One size fits all for allergy jab for high hay fever, asthma.
Yeah, I don't know how I felt about that.
Eczema on the way. A jab that could provide a one size fit all, fits all. A jab is a vaccine for approach to tackling hay fever and whatnot. And Swiss researchers claimed allergies that blight the lives of 10 million British sufferers could be largely eradicated with a single vaccine. Now, the allergy conference in London heard the one-size-fits-all injection wards off asthma, eczema, hay fever, and even peanut allergies could be on the shelves within 4 to 5 years. Is that another one?
Yeah, BP spill cleanup crews.
All right, but I wanted to just finish this. And the experts say, if the jab known only as CYT003, which has been tested on humans, is properly developed, it becomes the Hail Grail vaccines due to its helping ward off multiple allergies. It would be welcome news to the estimated 1 in 5 Britons, or 10 million people who suffer from hay fever. A trial conducted by scientists, Cetos Biotechnology, a firm in Zurich, concludes that a course of the vaccine was almost as good as steroids at keeping asthma under control. But I don't agree with anything that has to do with a vaccination.
So we got multiple ones in one.
You know, that you can believe this. I mean, you know, take it as you want, but it's you can check the article out yourself.
I think those multiple ones are really bad.
Really, really.
BP spill cleanup crews risk their health. Workers involved in the cleanup of the spilled oil from the ruptured BP well in the Gulf of Mexico are at an increased risk of short-term lung, liver, and kidney damage from fumes. According to the statement sent to the Institute of Medicine, the cleanup crews suffer from short-term health problems caused secondary to the emissions of volatile organic compounds from oil. Organic compounds in crude oil are toxic. Exposure to these compounds, therefore, may lead to the long-lasting health effects like kidney failure, liver problems, or cancer.
You really are talking about a triangle of heat, chemical exposure, and then the behavior changes that you see as a result, said Linda McCauley, Dean of Emory University of God, Almighty, 14 degrees here, and adding that the exertional heat stroke is the main factor which may aggravate the condition. These people are working under 110 degree heat out down there right
now.
Wow. With these noxious fumes. And, compared to hired workers, cleanup volunteers are believed to be at a greater risk as they are less trained and less likely to use protective gear. While the protective gears are believed to be effective in lowering the risk of damage, many of the workers usually take them off due to the heat of the Gulf, the expert noted. These studies have shown us consistent evidence for ocular neurological dermal exposure as a result of exposure to volatile organic compounds. Personal protection equipment definitely reduces exposure, and education, particularly of cleanup workers, is extremely important. Many, however, believe that the risk of the diseases have reduced in the past weeks as oil has lost some of its toxic components as it has become weathered in the water. Millions of gallons of oil have poured into the Gulf since the deep water rise and exploded on April 20th, killing 11 workers blowing out the well. A newly revealed BP document indicates that around 100,000 barrels of oil per day are gushing out of the well into the Gulf. And for those of you who don't know, 100 gallons equates, one barrel equates to 44 gallons times 100,000, 44 gallons per barrel. And so 100,000 barrels is, what? 44 times 100. It's 4 million gallons. Something like that.
Uh-huh.
Right? So there, folks, there you go. That's what's getting out there in the water. And, you know, we're just about ending here. But it's pretty sick. It's a pretty sick situation here, folks. I'm sorry that, And I was hoping we'd have something to leave you on a brighter note, but I don't think so. Let's see. There was something that I saw that might be of interest here. Oh, I thought this was that was interesting, but let's see.
YouTube.
Yeah, there was one that I saw here, and I thought would be good, and I wanted to...
That one?
No, it's coming. No, it wasn't here. But there was one that they had a strategy to stop the oil spill. There was a company that was able to do it. And...
I don't think it can be stopped.
There was another thing that I wanted to mention today, too, that we might as well end with Ron Paul.
Yeah.
What if the people wake up? This is fairly good. I listened to
it. Madam Speaker, I have a few questions for my colleagues. What if our foreign policy of the past century is deeply flawed and has not served our national security interests? What if we wake up one day and realize that the terrorist threat is a predictable consequence of our meddling in the affairs of others and has nothing to do with us being free and prosperous? What if propping up repressive regimes in the Middle East endangers both the United States and Israel? What if occupying countries like Iraq and Afghanistan and bombing Pakistan is directly related to the hatred directed toward us? What if someday it dawns on us that losing over 5,000 American military personnel in the Middle East since 9/11 is not a fair trade-off for the loss of nearly 3,000 American citizens, no matter how many Iraqi, Pakistani, and Afghan people are killed or displaced?
I'm going to stop there because there's this one article that I wanted to mention before we close tonight. It's called... Cancer cells killed by chemotherapy may cause cancer to spread.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So chemotherapy is known to come with a long list of side effects and
debilitating nausea and hair loss to extreme fatigue. And in many cases, it does not cure or even stop cancer from progressing. But what if chemotherapy does something no one has realized before during all the decades it has been in use? What if chemo actually encourages cancer to spread throughout the body, the process known as metastasis? Researchers with the University of Alabama at Birmingham Comprehensive Cancer Center and UAB Department of Chemistry have just been awarded $805,000 grant from the U.S. Department of Defense Breast Cancer Research Program to see if the answer to these questions is yes. The study is investigating the very real possibility that dead cancer cells left over after chemotherapy spark cancer to spread to other parts of the body. How could dead cells... I don't get that. I understand that.
We're about over, so we want to. I'm going to refer you to this article and read further. It's on naturalnews.com, and it's called Cancer Cells Killed by Chemotherapy May Cause Cancer to Spread. So you can check that out yourself, naturalnews.com. And quite frightening and disturbing. It alters the DNA. Could be deadly factors, sparks the dreaded process. Imagine it.
Ooh.
So I want to thank everybody for joining us. This is our last show this is Wednesday. We'll join us tomorrow night and Thursday night, and we will talk to you then.
Okay, good night, folks.
Good night, everyone.